It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. You got to hear the new opening into the Scotty Johnny Podcast, performed by the lovely and talented Holly Flottam, the most lovely and most talented of the adults in the Flottam household, at least.
What? What are you talking about, John? I'm married?
Yeah, wow. That's true.
When did that happen?
Yeah, and in all fairness, Ruby's almost certainly past you in terms of talented. She's definitely ahead of you in loveliest, I'd say.
Yeah, she's better spoken, and my 4-year-old son is definitely smarter. So I'm pretty much just a cinder block in the house now. I'm really good for holding papers down.
Everybody needs to have a talent, I suppose. But welcome in again to the Scotty Johnny Podcast. We're glad to have you along with us. You can follow the podcast itself at ScottyJohnny1 on Twitter. You can also follow Aaron. Where do they follow you?
Well, nowadays, you're probably better off finding me on Facebook, so just look up Aaron Flottam and just do that. I got to catch up on about 500 pictures from spring break. But otherwise, you can find me at Cheddar Talk, at Cheddar Talk, John.
All right, and you can follow me at JBarn54. Also, if you need to send us anything, you can send it to the podcast at our new email site. It's a part of our website. It's just podcast@scottyjohnny.com. And, of course, you can find all of our episodes at scottyjohnny.com, as well as little things that we'll be writing from time to time to try to just increase things that we'll have up there and give you some of our insights as we go. But we have plenty to talk about this week. Not as many different sports, but we have plenty of things to talk about, and we're going to get right into it with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Aaron, last week we started talking a little bit about the draft, and some of the people we were talking about with Eric Rosenfels last week were some of the early picks. People were looking at specifically at the 12 pick. And I want to try to expand a little bit more and get some of this in here. And I know you're going to be mostly talking out of your left side of your face, we'll say.
Okay.
Making things up as we go.
Yeah. Hey, that guy sounds great. Sure, why not? We'll listen back to this podcast a year from now and I was either right or wrong. Hey, there you go.
That's so true.
That Eric guy was smart. We can keep him around. He knew what he was talking about. Yeah. Let's bring that guy back again.
Absolutely. And some of the things I want to talk about, the first couple picks we were talking, looking at some of the mocks that have been going on in this last week or so, one of the most frustrating ones for Packer fans, I think, was the ESPN. They had the dueling mock drafts of Kuiper and Todd McShay, and they were they agreed that at 12, the Packers will take DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I did see that, believe it or not, yeah.
That blew my mind. They're still rating him as one of the top 10 players and one of the top parts of the draft in terms of wide receivers. And
just Eric last week made a pretty good argument about him. I agreed with the argument. Eric did a very good job arguing it, but I still, in my heart of hearts, don't believe it. And you know, you alluded to it. You know, I'm not like a draft Nick. I'm with college football like most people are with the tournament. NCAA basketball tournament. Like I kind of tune in out throughout this season. You're super smart. You watch everything. You're a huge Badgers fan, so you're in on a lot of the college talent that comes in and out. But like for me, you know, it's just kind of by the eye test. And like I didn't hear about this guy all year long.
Yeah,
Metcalf kid. Like I didn't hear about him all year long. Like you hear blips here and there. Like oh, Heisman hopeful, or this guy's the best wide receiver, or watch out for this guy. And I don't remember DK Metcalf at any point in time until after the season, after the national championship game. In the NCAA tournament right now, John Morant from Murray State had one good game against Marquette. Now, you know, so he'll probably go a little bit higher in the draft. Basketball, football, apples to oranges, I get it. But at least I heard about him during competition. DK Metcalf, I never heard of in my entire life until like, hey, look at this dude. He's 6'8" and all muscle, and he plays wide receiver. He's the best wide receiver in the draft. No,
I don't think so. He wasn't the best receiver on his own team. I mean,
no.
A.J. Brown got way more catches. Like I said, his last two seasons at Ole Miss, he actually had more catches and more yards than Metcalf's entire career at Ole Miss. So I don't understand it at all. And I believe
people want him drafted for potential, just like they wanted quarterback that Oakland took, Russell.
Oh yeah, Russell the muscle, Jamarcus Russell.
Jamarcus Russell. Yeah, this guy's got tons of talent. Great. Yeah. Talent's awesome.
And next time you need a quarterback to throw from his knees during a game, then that'll be important. But I haven't seen a guy need to do it because I think they're generally down when they get down to their knees.
Burt Bielevin always said that the best pitcher he ever saw, the best stuff he ever saw in a pitcher, was at the AA level. He said he saw a kid, and he wouldn't say his name, and he says this on Barrero every once in a while. They bring it up every spring. They're like, this guy had five pitches that you couldn't hit, but he was a mental case. You couldn't keep him on the mound long enough to pitch to anybody. Like, nobody could hit him, but he was a mental case. And I'm not saying DK Metcalf's a mental case. We all know now that Jamarcus Russell was a mental case. But, I mean, like, you can't draft off straight talent unless it's, like, in the sixth or seventh round.
And it's so much easier for having a defensive back in the NFL to say, we can plan around this. Mm-hmm. In much the same way that, like, Jordy Nelson was so fast. He was really fast. He was a great wide receiver in that regard. You had to worry about him deep. So cornerbacks hung back and played off the line and tried to just not get beat deep. But he was also so great at cutting that he was suddenly stop on a dime and then get that beautiful little out back shoulder route thing. Then you had to stop and play that. And that really changed the way that you had to play him because he could do either one of them. I don't know that DK Metcalf can do that.
Yeah, that Jordy Nelson, how many times did he do that fly and then he go into a post flag post move? And all of a sudden, the safety's on his butt, and he's running down the middle of the field.
And it doesn't work with the sort of system that I see LaFleur doing. LaFleur has a lot of motion. He's got a lot of different parts moving, trying to set up systems and trying to set up and scheme people open. And I don't see that he fits into that. He's just he's a 1970s Raider. You know, he's going to run down the field, and you're going to throw a deep ball. And that's just not what we run anymore.
The Packers already have a DK Metcalf. His name's Jimmy Graham. He just cuts better and is slower.
And we have MVS, who's really fast as well. That guy can move. He's smarter, and he can cut. And the guy is just somebody who can play. I don't want to see it at 12. That's not the spot where I want to see some of these things. If I'm entirely honest, the first name I want to be able to see at that spot is I want to see Montez Sweat. What I love about him, he's got great speed. At the combine, he actually ran a 4.41. That's crazy for an end guy. He's 6'5", 260. He's got great speed.
So it's like if DK Metcalf played D-end.
Yeah, but better than that because he actually has a really good change of direction. If you go watch some of the stuff on him, you even just go YouTube it, you'll find out that he's got a lot of these plays, quick running backs trying to cut back inside of him, and he can stop on a dime and stay with him. He's got the ability to keep his feet and to keep his shoulder square to the line of scrimmage and pursue well and get, once he gets that edge set, like what Matthews always killed us on this last year was, rather than take on a blocker and force him down the line, he's cutting inside and getting beat outside. And he's losing that contain. Montez Sweat is beating guys to the outside and then staying inside and forcing them back in towards his help because all your help's inside. There's no help on the sideline. It's all inside. So he can do that, but he can also then stop on that dime and come back in at him and still make that play. He's got good bend around the edge. He's decent with his arms. He's got good long arms. He does let blockers get into his body some, which is something that's it concerns you. You'd rather have an outside linebacker who can keep the hands off. During the film, at least, Ja'Kai Polite is a guy who did really well, like forcing his hands, keeping hands off of him, not allowing them getting inside of him. But Sweat, not quite as good at that, but also not a fat guy who screwed up. So he's got that on Ja'Kai Polite. Ed Oliver is my 1A pick at that spot. I love him as a D-tackle.
That's a kid from Houston, right?
Yeah, D-tackle out of Houston.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Undersized, the way that people do those comparisons. And the comparables are always kind of terrible because you're only comparing him to someone great. So they compare him to Aaron Donald, but that's not who he is. That's not who he's going to be. He's not going to be that good. He's going to be
he's a poor man's Reggie White. Oh,
jeez.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
That kind of opens the spectrum there a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, just don't compare him to Fackrell. We'll feel good. No, he's a bit undersized, but he's got good strength. He's got good speed. He's got incredible quickness. He can get places fast. The thing that hurts him the most is getting double teamed and having to deal with a double team. When he's on a line, if they put him at the end spot and put him on a line with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, he's not going to be double teamed at any point during that season. All right, so he's going to have time to work on some of those things while being the third best defensive lineman on that front. That would be great. I really want Sweat because I think the rotational ability of having another defensive end or outside linebacker type force there really changes his team because you can move things around. He's got good size and good body. Brian Burns is one of the other guys they get talking about at that spot. He's the Florida State guy. A little taller, kind of thinner, though. I think he played at like 235. Good speed on him, too. The slightness just really does concern me, having him in the run. He seems to pursue very well. He's got a good motor, but I don't like quite how he's getting involved in the run. But I think that's my kind of 1-2-3 in what I'd like to see in that first round.
Hey, John, so just on the side, I was just thinking of people that would be poor man's Reggie White's. Bruce Smith would be a poor man's Reggie White, right?
Yeah, he could play inside and out. He played D-tackle and D-end, right. Yeah.
Well, Reggie White, I remember watching him play cornerback in one game. Anyhow, God, those Bills teams had a lot of good players, didn't they?
They did.
They were stacked. Yeah, no. So that said, you know, you were talking about Oliver, and I think about this, and you think about these guys that are edge rushers like Sweat and the other guy you just mentioned.
Yeah, Brian Burns.
Thank you. Ed Oliver, we've got two good defensive tackles. We've got another first-round draft pick. And you'd be crazy not to use it for offense. I don't know. Frankly, like we've talked about this a million and one times on this podcast, and everyone knows this, all you need is a good offensive line and a good defensive line, and everything goes from there. So if the Packers were to blow the number 12 and the number 30 on a edge rusher first and a defensive tackle second. Now, I'm not saying Ed Oliver is going to be at 30 because that's an impossible pipe dream. Right. But I'm just saying, like, there's plenty of good defensive tackles that are still available at 30 or even second round. I mean, something to reinforce that middle to help out Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, you know, with some like top end talent instead of just the next guy. Yeah, that's what you need to succeed right there. And Blake Martinez will actually be a good linebacker if he's got – well, wait, never mind. You'll poke holes in that argument, so I'll just stop right there.
I don't know. I think there's going to be a harder time
Jim hates Martinez. Sorry.
Oh, does he? Yeah, I'm all right with Martinez. I just think that he's more of a he's beloved as a fan favorite more than he's beloved as an actual talent. I think he's good. I think he's good, and he belongs as an NFL starter. I just would love somebody better than him. I'd like to see somebody who's better at blitzing and a little better in coverage. Now, I'll tell you this, though. Martinez improved on both those areas in the last 2 years, and that's definitely something that needs to be said. He doesn't get off blocks at an elite level, and his blitzing is it's just okay.
Well, he comes from a long line of middle linebackers from Green Bay that are very likable, fan favorites that aren't that great at their position. They have some highlights, you know, Brian Noble, Johnny Holland, your brother Barnett.
Don't put him in that category. He was leading, he was top 3 and 4 in tackles most years as a middle
linebacker. Just like Blake Martinez.
Yeah, but he also had sacks and interceptions. He could cover. He was way faster than Blake Martinez. Way faster. He was a safety.
Only defending him because you guys have the same last name.
He out-tackled Brian Urlacher half the years they played at the same level.
Tony Bennett made an album with Lady Gaga. Are you going to defend him?
The pass rusher, Tony Bennett?
No, the singer, Tony Bennett. Sorry.
Tony Bennett, the coach at Virginia?
Yeah. Oh,
by the
yeah.
way, Tony Bennett was the first Packers jersey I ever had, just so we're all clear on that. This thing he said, going back to this, though, I think the thing like you were talking about getting defensive line talent in the back half of the first round, top of the second round. I think there's going to be less of it there. I think in the draft, you're not just looking for best player available. You're looking for best value available. And I think that's one of the problems that we miss here is that it isn't just the best player and it isn't just to fill a hole. You want the best total value. The value up front is a lot of these edge rushers and some of these pass guys here, some of this defense up front. what we can get in the back half of that round, it looks a little different. Now, I think that somebody like we talked Nasir Adderley last week, a guy we like out of Delaware, and I like him more for the fact that he's Herb Adderley's, I think, first cousin twice removed is how you would say it. His grandfather was Herb's first cousin. I like that, but it's not the greatest thing in the world. If somebody is still there, like I don't think Akeem Butler will be there, but that would be amazing if he was still there out of Iowa State. He's a 4.48 40. The dude is 6'5", 225. I mean, he is a freak and fits in exactly with the sort of players we drafted last year at wide receiver. Somebody else who fits in that sort of scheme in terms of wide receiver would be somebody like Miles Boykin out of Notre Dame. He's 6'4", 230. He ran a 4.42. He has a 6.77 three-cone drill, so keep it under 7 seconds. And he also did a 43.5-inch vertical jump.
Good Lord. I think I'm that tall. No, I'm
I hope you're taller than that. Yeah,
you 72. Are. 72. I'm 72. That'd be a hell of a heck of a vertical jump right there. Sorry.
Yeah, if you did that, that would be amazing. Or if anybody ever did. But the production value for him wasn't quite what you'd hope for, especially from a team that competed a lot last year. He had 59 receptions, 872 yards, 8 touchdowns. But he's a guy who could come in and be, you know, fourth on the depth chart, fight with Jamon Moore or something like that, and maybe, you know, Kumerow and MVS for that four spot. And he could be somebody who could be very valuable. I'd like to see him more at the top of the second round than at the back of the first. In that 30 spot, the guy I would most like to see still available and in that position there would be Noah Fant, one of the tight ends from Iowa, because Hockenson won't be there by then. Hockenson might be gone by 10, and it would be great to be able to see Fant. Now, Noah Fant's a tight end who can run like a 4.5 40. He has a sub-7 three-cone drill. The guy has great hands. He can run like a wide receiver. He is a real talent. The concern that we've seen, and I've heard a lot of people say this, is that he definitely didn't get enough big plays out of the number of targets he had and didn't make enough out of it. He should have been a much higher level prospect, but didn't quite put together the sort of production he should have had for the talent that he displays when you measure him.
Well, he had a mid-level quarterback, and he was playing with Hockenson, who was getting all the catches.
But he's the more talented athletic guy, but Hockenson definitely also is way better in the run game. And man, if they get Hockenson at 12, I'm not going to be unhappy. The thing everybody needs to remember if they get Hockenson somehow or if they get Fant at the back of the first round is that tight ends traditionally do not do well in their first season. You have to wait a year. All right? So, like, our buddy, Big Bob Tonyan, he's a guy I'm going to look to start producing more this next year. Guy's got good hands. He moves well. I just want to see him on the field. You know, I just want to see him get out there. And
that'd be a good start, but yes,
all step pro. One, but all pro. I don't need that, but I think that he can be a good talent, and I'd like to see a lot more of him this year. But if we got Fant, don't count on him being a stud the first year, but I think that tight end is key to LaFleur's offense in the blocking scheme, which is where Hockenson's way better, but also in the short passing game. What killed his offense a lot last year was that he has Delanie Walker, but Delanie Walker got injured very early in the season. If we had a draft where we're getting Montez Sweat and then Noah Fant, that's my ideal right there. That's the top of the first round. And if we could get Miles Boykin, beginning of the second, and then I'm going to go three deep here, all right? Well, which is actually the fourth pick. One guy I would love to see to fall to the 75th pick, early third round, Amani Hooker. All right, keep your eyes out for this guy. I'm very
Hooker.
Excited by this idea. Yeah.
Hooker.
Because he was Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year last year at Iowa. What he did was he came in and played. He played
all
a couple
this,
years.
All this Iowa love, jeez.
I know, it's kind of crazy. You'd think they'd have done better, but
you'd think that they would have finished in the top three of the Big Ten. But anyways.
Yeah, they had some good talent there, but the thing is, he actually was he came in and he was Defensive Back of the Year, and he's also he played kind of the hybrid sort of play. He played that position where he was kind of the linebacker slash safety position, which would be key in this defense. It's something that I think would go great in here. He's also got great hands. He reads the field very well. You don't want to give the comp of Nick Collins if you don't have to, but, I mean, this guy's got good hands, and he also he can read the field once he's got the ball in his hands. And that's definitely something something that I think is key and was missing in this defense last year. And I know Aaron's not listening because he clearly just turned on a television or something in the back there.
I seriously just turned on the national championship game again. Fairness and Honesty Act here. It is Monday night, and we are about 7 minutes left here in the national championship game, and I just want to check and see what the score was real quick. And Virginia is leading 55-47 because we do have interest in this game due to the Bennett family, so that's why we're cheering for them. And good thing Michigan State lost. No, so sorry about that. The mute button, I hit the mute button by accident.
No.
So what I was going to say, and I was going to say something controversial, I'm sure, and that is that I would like to see the Packers use everything except for the second round draft pick. Now they can use their second round draft pick on some talent because that's when they cash in. Like the second round for the Packers is money. I would like to see the Packers spend every single draft pick they have this year on defensive or offensive line, to be perfectly honest. Like, and that's not even a reach really, if you think about it. Yeah. As far as like everything goes in the world of the NFL, because it always comes down to defensive line or offensive line. You know, because everybody's like, well, what's the winning formula? New England's the winning formula. Can we get past that just for a second? Like, there's no other team that wins as much as New England.
No.
And the only thing that they always have in common is a good defensive line and a good offensive line and a quarterback with a limp wrist. Sorry.
And a bunch of good route-running slot receivers.
Receivers.
And they have edge rushing and a safety who can play.
Right. And I mean, and we have that already on the Packers, right?
Well, we have one safety now, and I think we went out and got a bunch of guys who can actually edge rush. So I think that'll be better. Some of the guys
you can use that second round draft pick on a safety then. Like I said you could use a second round draft pick on anything else you wanted.
Well, yeah, Nasir Adderley is the guy we were talking about that would be a great safety there. If Chauncey, was it Gardner Johnson out of Florida is there, that would be a nice pickup as well. And I will just call him Chance the Gardener for those of you who have ever seen Being there and are cinephiles like myself.
you are a total cinephile. By the way, the TV's off in the background, so I'm back engaged now. Sorry, John.
That's good. That's a Peter Sellers movie, Being There, where he's a man. His name is Chance, and he keeps telling people, "He's like, I'm Chance the Gardener." And people are like, Chauncey Gardner. I see.
I haven't seen that movie in at least 15 years.
Yeah, me neither.
My mom was a huge Peter Sellers fan. I grew up on all the Pink Panther movies and the whatnot. And Doctor Strangelove is my number one favorite movie of all time, which he stars in three times.
Yes. My dad is a librarian, so it's always great. We could always get whatever movie we wanted. He could find it and he would bring it home. So. Made sure that we watched all the best stuff as we were growing up, and it was always great to see. If you're talking about guys,
Peter Sellers was awesome, but God, George C. Scott was so good in that movie.
He is great in that, yeah. Two guys that we talked about last week who I think fit your mold here, Cody Ford, the guy out of Oklahoma, who we loved also because he did play tackle, and that kind of fits into the Packers scheme a lot because the Packers like guys who can play two positions. On that offensive line, being that tackle helps him be a better pass blocker. He's a little too short generally in the idea of playing a tackle at the next level. He's got the body to play guard, and he's a bit of a mauler, so he could be a guy who would fall. If he's there at the beginning of the second yet, yeah, I want to see Cody Ford or Chris Lindstrom. He's the guard from Boston College. Either one of those two guys would be a great pickup on this team. And would definitely push for playing time here very soon and probably take over a spot next year. So I would love to see either of them. My notes here, I specifically wrote, is like, hey, if Chris Lindstrom or Cody Ford fall, I'm all in. I'm in on that idea. So, and that falls exactly like what you were just talking about.
Yeah, and I automatically assumed that someone named Lindstrom played for St. Thomas in Minnesota.
Yeah, or was a hockey player is what I assumed.
Hockey.
We're talking hacky. We will move on.
Goals. Not too many goals.
Yeah, so it'll be good to have Andy Herman on here next week, hopefully to give us a little bit more say on this and to get a little more depth on the watching. I get some, but there's no way I'm watching as much film as Andy Herman does. So he's definitely got more of an inside edge on this. So that would be, it's going to be good to have that next week.
And he's so smart, and I'm already checked out on football and into baseball and watching the Bucks now.
Well, collectively, we're going to check out on football for a bit now and start moving into that baseball. So, man, what a great first 10-game set for the Brewers. It's exactly what you asked for if you were a Brewers fan. Of course, I believe, and I think we all believe, that the Brewers will continue at the current pace and win 129 games this year.
Yes!
That would be an 80% clip. Brewers are 8-2. Great starts. I believe against the Cubs this last week. I was looking this up again, and I was trying to just recollect it going back and talking with my law partner. But yeah, the Brewers had a home run in every first inning against the Cubs this last week.
Fantastic. I you know what? You are completely right. I didn't even notice that. That's awesome.
I thought back on that. I was like, we had a home run in every first inning, didn't we? And it was like, yeah, we did. The Lokane had one, and Yelich had two. And Braun definitely has the launch angle. He's figured something out.
No kidding. You think he got to figure it out?
I hope so, and I hope he can stick with it. I hope it's not something that just gets picked up in film and they just kill him on it. But he was hitting them.
No, he hit so many hard line drives last year that just went into the shortstop's glove with a little leap. I mean, it's not like he wasn't hitting the ball hard. He just needed something. I mean, we both played baseball, you know, not at any real level, but like when you just smoke a ball, like, and I played bar league softball, and you just smoke a ball and you just feel it and you hit it right off the sweet spot, and but you're 1/8 of an inch off and it goes straight to the third baseman, easy out, you know, well, not an easy out because it came at him at 110 miles an hour. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it just, he didn't even have to move. And now all of a sudden he's putting it 20 rows deep. You know, that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, and it was from all types. Like, he had some low ones, but he also took out a high fastball and just launched that ball out of there. It was great to see him taking lots of different types of pitches, not just having a spot where he was hitting well, but that he was hitting from a couple different, I guess, the launch angle worked from different positions on or above the plate, high, fast, the different speeds. It was still working, so that's the thing that I thought was really great on that. Yelich just picked up exactly where he left off.
Everyone said he was a fluke, and he ends up leads off the season. He has a walk-off double, or it would have been a double if it wouldn't have been a walk-off.
No, it was still a double because he was already on his way to second before they scored.
Good call. Good point. Anyways, and he had four home runs in the first four games of the year, which ties it's happened seven times, but, you know, four home runs in his first four games. Yeah, that's awesome. And then he's still, he's still contributing. The guy's on fire. He was National League Player of the Week, as we talked about last week. And they knocked down the Cardinals, the Reds, the new and improved Reds, and the Cubs, boom, 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 right in a row. And the crazy thing is, on top of it, so we lost Knebel to Tommy John surgery, which he well advisedly did early and often, just, you know, instead of. This has been something that's been going on with him for a while, and it goes back to the old saying that every pitcher who's going to make the major leagues should just have Tommy John surgery before they make the major leagues, because sooner or later you're going to need it. And so he's gone. Jeffress, that's a weird thing. And so the Brewers won their first six games. They went 7-1, and they won by a grand total of 7 runs. They won six games by a total of 7 runs, which, and a run differential of +3, you know, or +1, a run differential +1. And that's insane, but it also goes back to it. And so they asked, too many names in my head right now, manager,
Craig Counsell,
how he's going to do the closer bit right now, while it's, you know, when once Knebel went out, it kind of, and Jeffress is out, everything went into one. And Haterade, my God, that guy is a machine.
Yeah.
He is he's the best bullpen pitcher in baseball, hands down right now. I mean, what happened last night in the last game against the Cubs, the last 8 hitters.
Yeah.
Just
9 pitch outing for a shot for the closer role there too. Gets the save on that.
And I hate the Cubs, and I you know, and I hate their fans, but they have good players. And watching him and Rizzo battle last night and then him come out with a strikeout.
Yeah.
Rizzo's a good player. He is a dang fine player. And he ended up walking away with that on a like an 8 or 9 pitch strikeout. You know, that's his delivery, that crazy sidearm, the movement, it's unreal. And this Brewers team, I'm glad they came out strong because everyone said that they were a fluke. And, you know, there's going to be ups and downs this season. There's probably going to be a 6-game losing streak, maybe even a 10-game losing streak at some point. It happens to all the teams. But
yeah,
there's something about this team. The mojo from last season hasn't left.
True.
And it feels like they're still playing playoff baseball. And if you didn't...
And they seem to love playing with each other. It's a great game to watch. It's a great team to watch. I've enjoyed watching baseball. I love watching baseball.
Right.
It is a lot of fun. And, you know, it's like growing up, I think that every American boy's first love, at least your age, my age, my son's age even, I think, it just is baseball. It's the first game you love because it's the first game you take your kids to. You explain it to them. You're watching it every day. They really get to learn it because you watch it every day, or you just put it on the radio. You don't have to see it to know what's going on because it translates very well to the radio. And it's something you can just put on while you're doing yard work. You can put it on doing anything. You can always have the Brewers with you. And it's wonderful. I just love baseball.
Favorite Euchre quote of all time, and I'm paraphrasing here. All right, Pat, Brewers down now 9-1. Couple of grand salamis, and we're back into this one.
Yeah, I love it.
But no, you're absolutely right. And full disclosure, John is retired from the military. I still slog through my military, and I was at Fort McCoy this last weekend, and have Sling on my phone, and I had spotty reception, but it was good enough to get the games in. And I had about 20 troops huddled around me from age 19 to, and most of my troops are from the Milwaukee, Kenosha, that area over where I am in Janesville. And so I had about 20 troops huddled around me watching the game, and they're watching. And it's, unfortunately enough, it was a Saturday night game against the Cubs where the Cubs kind of whooped up on the Brewers, but there was 20 people huddled around me watching a little one by, or however big a Android screen is, 1.5 inch by 4 inch screen, and getting into it. And it's April. Yeah. And it was playoff mentality, like, no, we can't lose to the Cubs right now. We cannot lose to the Cubs. And I'm like, this didn't exist 2 years ago. This didn't exist back in the Prince Fielder, Ryan, or Hardy days, JJ Hardy days.
JJ Hardy.
Yeah, I mean, it's had a fever.
People
pitch
I was right around now were definitely excited by those days. They were pretty fantastic. But yeah, it's been great to watch. They're definitely the defense looks good. The hitting looks good. They have a couple. They can hit from anywhere around in that order. Arcia did well against the Cubs, but he needs to figure out his bats a little bit better yet. I think
he's worth it on defense for his for his offense. I mean, he's streaky on offense. God, he's good at shortstop.
He is. So. Yeah, it's great to have the glove there. I'd like to see him hit a little better. If he can hit 200, he's definitely worth it. You know,
gets across the Mendoza line, that'd be nice. Yes.
Yeah, I think he'll get there. He's definitely shown the flashes that he can do these things. I just want to see it more consistently, and I think he'll get there. He's young. This is his third season in the majors, and his first season was good.
He's 14 or 15 years old. Yes.
Yeah, he looks like that. Yeah.
They can't find his birth certificate. I get it. Yes.
So yeah, I'm very excited about the Brewers. And like you just said a little bit ago, the best part about the whole thing is that they did it against the division foes. They went out and took the division foes, and now they're playing the Angels right now. So, and it's a 2-2 game as we speak. You obviously, by the time you listen to this, will know the final outcome of that game. And Yelich almost had a home run, but there's a guy in the Angels who's really good at fielding as well as hitting, and he apparently went out and took that away.
Does his name sound like a fish?
Some kind of fish. Tim fish. Salmon. That's it.
Like a half billion dollar fish.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they had Tim Salmon and Mike Trout. That doesn't seem right. It seems fixed.
Just remember, John, we're 10 games into the season, and the Brewers are 5 games up on the Cubs.
Oh, so good.
And had they somehow pulled out Saturday night, they'd already be 7 up on the Cubs.
Yeah. anything we can do to get ahead of them. But moving on to other Milwaukee sports, the Bucks have clinched the best record in the NBA. They will have home court advantage throughout. I almost said field because I'm so used to saying field, but home court advantage throughout. They have one game left. They will be playing the Thunder on the 10th, which is Wednesday. But it doesn't matter. The game doesn't matter. Not at all for us. I believe it still matters for the Thunder, but the Bucks are locked into the top spot.
Right.
And it's just kind of seeing who they're going to play left now. So there's a couple teams right in that eight spot. Technically, was it the Heat and Detroit are right there in that area. And the Heat, I don't think, have a chance at getting into there.
Heat, Hornets, and Detroit are all within one game of the eighth spot right
now. And Orlando could fall down to eight, I believe. They're only a little bit up. So
no, not anymore. They clinched tonight, actually.
Yeah, but I'm saying they could drop to the eighth spot. They're in the seven, but they're only a half game ahead of Detroit. Yes. I honestly would rather see Detroit. Actually, the team I'd most want to see is Charlotte, because the Bucks own Charlotte entirely this year. I don't want to see Orlando so much. That just something about that matchup didn't go very well this year for the Bucks. I'd rather see Charlotte as my number one choice. If Charlotte could pass them, first off, it means Frank Kaminsky's in the playoffs, which is good for everybody.
Right.
But also, I'd rather see Charlotte than Detroit. I'd rather see Detroit than Orlando or Miami, I guess. But those are the kind of the order I'd go. My guess is it's going to be Detroit, because I think just the way that their last two games line up, my guess is we're playing Detroit. I'm not really worried the Bucks are going to lose that.
No. The only teams I'm actually worried about is if the Celtics somehow wake up, because they have the talent, but they've been self-imploding all year long. The 76ers have played well against the Bucks, but they're the 76ers. And then there's the Raptors, which, I mean, they're a good team too, but, I mean, they also, I mean, I know it's a completely different cast of characters, but the Raptors find an easy way out. The Bucks have seemed to become the Cavaliers of the last 10 years just overnight. Like, LeBron leaves, and it's not even the LeBron thing. I think LeBron was on the downhill anyways, and, I mean, that's an easy thing to say. The guy's got so many miles on his legs and is such an absolutely great player. Eight straight finals. He's pretty much played in the last 8 years 14 seasons, if you count all the games, plus carrying teams on his back. That's not a shot at LeBron, but LeBron was on the downhill anyways, and he knew that, and that's why he left town. And, I mean, and so the Bucks are a much better cast of characters behind a superstar, a young superstar. And it's just basically the Bucks just took the place of where the Cavaliers were. And it's just, unless the Celtics step up or the 76ers get their talent to work together, the Pacers were a real threat, except until Oladipo got hurt, who was a superstar. And so now they're just a bunch of really good players. It'd be like the Bucks minus Giannis.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be, the thing is, the Bucks are going to play either the Celtics or the Pacers in that second round.
Right.
Because they're not going to have to play the Sixers or the Raptors until that last round. Then they're going to have to beat each other up while we get to play one of those two.
Because that's how seeding works.
Yeah, because those two, the Celtics and the Pacers, are going to have to play each other.
I listen to people on national radio talk about how the Bucks are going to run into the Raptors or the 76ers in the second round.
There's no chance of that.
That's not how seeding works.
Yeah, there's just no chance.
There's a word I was about to say right there, and I held it back, John. Be proud of me. It's not how sitting works. Breaks. No. But yeah, no, 1 and 4 are on one side. The only time you're going to see 2 and 3 is in the finals.
Yeah, and even they do reseeding, but there's no way that they're going to see one of those two teams in the second. That's the only sure thing, is they won't see either of those two teams in the second round.
Right. 1 and 4 are on one side, 2 and 3 are on the other side, and then 5 through 8 are at the mercy of where they receive people.
Yeah, because they might, I mean, if 5 wins and whatever, 6 wins somehow, or you like, then you can play somebody other than the 4 or 5, but only if it's one of the worst teams, not one of the better ones. You're not going to play 2 or 3 until that final round. That's a guarantee.
Yeah, 5 beats 4, 6 beats 3, 7 beats 2, and 8 beats 1, then there's some kind of thing where they can reseed it. So it's, because that would just be bad.
NBA reseeds every round, right?
Is that how they do it?
I believe they do that. But yeah, I mean, either way, you still there's no mathematical way where you play two or three. There's just no way. So yeah, that doesn't make
any sense. Nor would the NBA want that. They wouldn't want that either.
No, because they want the final. They want the final to be great because nobody watches the first round because it's terrible.
and honestly, the NBA, as much as they probably would hate having Milwaukee in the finals just because of the small fan base, just a star draw, get your tongue together there, Flottam, the star power of Giannis would be. I hope so. Please do. But I mean, what other star power are you going to draw from in the East? Like the 76ers, just because they're from Philadelphia and they've got Embiid and Butler, who everyone hates. They wanted the Celtics to do well, but the Celtics have imploded on themselves, and Brad Stevens is probably going to, I don't think he'll get fired, but he might be on the hot seat next year.
Yeah, next year.
The Pacers. Maybe next year. The Pacers, Nets, Magic, Pistons, Hornets, Heat, they don't want them in the finals. So basically it leaves the Bucks, Raptors, 76ers. And if anyone thinks that the NBA doesn't fix how things end up, they have a lottery system where you don't see where the balls come out for their draft picks, just so everyone knows. I mean, who else are you going to take from the East?
Maybe just to get the Heat, just so that you can see Dwayne Wade play his last season.
He's got hair like... Machado, him and he's got the haircut like Machado now. Oh, okay. That looks just like Miller Park. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, I think we've done enough on the NBA.
I think we've hit our quota here.
So I had a bad weekend at drill.
Yeah. We'll move on from the big stuff here, and we'll go into the next little part where we cover all the rest of Wisconsin sports, what we call the tail.
Now it's time for The Tale, covering Wisconsin's other sporting news.
So, Aaron, in The Tale, we do have a little bit of hockey for you.
And it's, oh, no kidding.
It's Where? Wonderful to be talking hockey. They're playing the Women's World Championships in Finland.
Hockey.
Which is pronounced Suomi, for those of you who don't know that. And I only know that because I lived in Iron Mountain for several years in the UP. And they still have, I believe, a Finnish broadcast somewhere up there in the UP for TV.
Yes, and Nokia phones come from Finland, just so everybody remembers that from their childhood. Mm-hmm. And my entire wife's side of the family are all Finnish. So don't say anything bad here, John.
I got nothing against the Finns.
Yes, good in people, the UP, Laplanders.
In the UP, it's all Iron Finns up there.
Yep, they're here.
Yeah, so... but Hillary Knight currently leads all goal scorers in the women's world. She has 3 goals. Annie Pankowski, 2 goals for Team USA. And both of those Team USA members, both former Badgers. And also playing in goal for Team USA, Alex Rigsby, also former Badger. Great week so far for Team USA. They're looking like the top team in this thing. They beat Finland, the home team, 6-2 to start things off. Then they got a wonderful game against number 2 ranked Canada. They beat the Canadians 3-2. Annie Pankowski with a big goal in that game. Rigsby, of course, gets the win. Then they got to play Switzerland. And the Swiss, they have beautiful mountains, they have wonderful chocolate, and they have their nice little coffee shops and stuff. And they're going to go home to that because Team USA blanked them 8-0. So I hope you enjoy all those other things because hockey is not your thing.
Switzerland's awesome. Go there on vacation, everybody. Just saying. It's awesome.
Aaron, one time in Iraq, told me that Switzerland is the most beautiful place in the world, and I questioned his patriotism. It was in the DFAC on the TIFRIC, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So, Team USA... Team USA will be... I know, man. Team USA will be closing out pool play against Russia on Tuesday. They'll be playing Russia to end pool play. Russia so far is 1-2. They have scored 3 goals and given up 10. And almost certainly Team USA will be finishing a pool play ranked number 1 and getting the top spot going into the actual playoff round of this. So good luck to the USA women, and bring home gold, ladies. The only things we'll say here is that softball and baseball have kicked off in the WIAC. Wisconsin Whitewater is predicted to win, I believe, in both those for the conference. But right now, UW Lacrosse leads the baseball at a 6-2 record in the conference, 10-8 overall. Whitewater is just 3-1 in the conference, 6-10 overall. Stout and UW Oshkosh, Oshkosh a traditional baseball powerhouse, both of them 5-3 in the conference. Oshkosh is 12-9 overall. Stout just 10-5.
Hey John, I got a hot take on a prediction for all those baseball teams.
What's that?
Their games are all going to be canceled this week due to the snowstorms coming through.
Almost certainly. I believe some of the games have already been canceled for this coming week here. So, Thursday night, I believe we're supposed to get a bunch of snow between 7 and depending where you are in the state. We're right at the line in central Wisconsin between like 5 and 7.
What's crazy is that in between this iteration of the podcast and what the podcast used to be a year ago is that right now I'd be on my knees praying to God that it doesn't get over 2 feet at one time because my snowblower is not big enough and the plow truck can't get in otherwise, because I was living in Duluth, Minnesota, and I'd be like, John, pray for me, pray for me, pray for me. But now I'm south of Highway 10, so it's like, good luck, everybody.
I still pray for you. Down
here. We'll be dealing with the floodwaters in 3 weeks when all your snow melts.
That's true. In women's softball, UW Whitewater and UW Stout, both 2-0 in conference. Whitewater at 12-6, Stout at 13-8 overall. UW Lacrosse is 3-1, 15-9 overall. They seem to have been playing just a lot more games down there in the banana belt of Wisconsin, right in the Mississippi Valley. Eau Claire is 1-0-1, 14-3-1 overall. And that is all that we have for you this week in the tail. So we'll finish up everything we have here. We're getting our last kind of parting shots here on our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, Aaron, is there anything big we should talk about in this last
call? I don't know, John. There was the Bleacher Report. You know, I've always said the Bleacher Report hates Wisconsin. Did they put something out last week, John? I don't know.
I've commented on this plenty on Twitter, I know, and I think you've probably seen some of this. The article is the Tyler Dunn article that they're talking about, and Aaron Rodgers today on the Wilde and Tausch, they're on the radio, and then the podcast that comes out with that too. They were commenting, they were talking to Aaron Rodgers about it, and he's denying just about everything that was in that article. He's like, there's a part where it says that Mark Murphy had a conversation telling him LaFleur was hired where he said, that being Mark Murphy told him, don't be the problem. And Aaron's like, that never happened. And of course, the thing that seems ridiculous is for that story to have been told, either Mark Murphy told Tyler Dunn about that, or Aaron Rodgers did, or Mark Murphy said, hey, somebody come in here and witness this phone call with me. Right?
Right.
So that part seems ridiculously strange to me. On top of that, there's a lot of there's unnamed sources, and unnamed sources are important in any sort of reporting and article. So I don't begrudge unnamed sources, but the named sources are crap. Greg Jennings is one of the least believable human beings regarding anything that has ever happened in his football life. That man spent his entire time with the Packers, talking up the Packers until he was coming up on a contract year. Then he bashed everybody until he signed a new contract. And then as soon as he left, he started bashing everybody. He has had several different instances in which he has talked about something that he says happened, usually when he shows up on The Herd or something like that. And immediately, 10 people who are in the room for whatever event Greg Jennings is describing will show up and say, like, that is not at all what happened. Nobody agrees with you. He's a confirmed liar. He just is a confirmed liar. You cannot use him as a source on anything Packer-related. And yeah, Greg Jennings does talk about other things in the media, but he never gets covered unless he's talking about the Packers. That man is trying to stay relevant and trying to make sure he stays on TV because that's the career he wants next. I mean, he likes being important. And I don't begrudge him that, but he's a confirmed liar. I wouldn't believe anything he has to say on this story. And some of it might be true, but I wouldn't believe Greg Jennings. That's what I'll say on that. Anything you think about the Bleacher Report article specifically, Aaron?
Oh, I was going to let you keep going for a little bit because I
could go on for quite a long time.
Oh, no, I was going to let you air stuff out. I was actually just writing stuff down about this. There's lots of stuff on the Bleacher Report. Like I said, fairness and honesty. I had drill over the weekend, so I read this on Thursday and didn't think about it until we were doing show prep. But with Greg Jennings, I remember Greg Jennings too, like when he was with the Vikings, that was when I was still in Enemy Territory and I listened to KFan a lot, and he'd be on with Paul Allen, the Paul Allen Project on The Fan. Full disclosure, I do listen to The Fan. I think it's a good, well-programmed, it's probably the best programmed sports station in the country, even though they talk about Minnesota stuff. I still listen to it. Greg Jennings, during his time with the Vikings, declared that he was going to move his family to the Twin Cities. He loved it there. He started up all sorts of charitable organizations there. He started bashing on the Packers, ripping this, ripping that. And then as soon as he was done with the Vikings, he started ripping on the Vikings too. It's just not as well known because nobody cares about him with the Vikings because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Everything he did with the Vikings doesn't matter. There was no big names.
Nobody's out there saying, like, man, Christian Ponder, that poor guy.
We talked about it about like 7 or 8 podcasts ago, like, or right after the season ended. The Star Trib, Fish Wrap Factory West, put out an article about family dishing dirt on Aaron Rodgers, the life of Aaron Rodgers. It's like, I don't recall any time the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel ever just trashing a Vikings player for no reason. And that's all they think about over there. It's a psychosis. Minnesota, go away. Anyways, back to the Bleacher Report thing. So a lot of the stuff that was put in there, it was very subjective? Is that the word I'm looking for? Like, it was very, like, lot of things that a lot of people wanted to hear. Like, that's got to be what the problem was, you know? And I remember even the one thing about, they even brought up, like, Brian Bostic. And it's like, Brian Bostic was a backup tight end. How could, so Mike McCarthy backing Brian Bostic lost the whole season. There was a lot of other things in that Seattle Seahawks game.
Yeah.
Brian Bostic was the straw that broke the camel's back. It really preyed on a lot of the, I almost said the S word there. It preyed on a lot of the stuff that Packers fans want to hear, because they want to hear that the Packers should have won 6 Super Bowls in the last 10 years with Aaron Rodgers. And the fact that the Patriots have done it with Tom Brady, who's not as good a talent, makes everyone in Green Bay mad. And the fact of the matter is that the Packers have had back-to-back bad seasons, including a really bad season.
Yeah.
And the Patriots haven't done that. And it's preying on that. And I've noticed that my dad's not nearly as mad as at the Packers being bad this year, because he had to endure 25 years of the Packers being bad. We're in a generation, 2 generations of Packers fans that are used to being good and are entitled. And the Packers are in a slump right now, and it happens. And right now there's a regime change. Things are happening. Are the Packers going to come out on this on top? I don't know. I called it about 12 podcasts ago that I think that Mark Murphy is going to be the end of the Packers and that we're going into a decade of really bad football. And you laughed at me, but we'll check back on that. Yeah. 10 years. But, you know, it is what it is. And this is what Packer fans, not like me, but the ones that hated Mike McCarthy, they wanted to hear this.
I think the other thing, too, is, like, there were a lot of weird stories, like, oh, Mike McCarthy used to sneak out to get massages and stuff. They said, oh, we heard from a player who heard from a friend who knew of a massage therapist who let it slip that one time. I was like, what a ridiculous sort of thing. The thing that got me as a lawyer is it had a lot of what we call conclusory language, meaning it made a statement without ever setting up any groundwork for why that statement was going to be true. And also never backed it up, like throwing in just singular throwaway lines like Ted Thompson used to fall asleep in meetings, but not telling you that somebody had ever said anything like that. And then it would back up with quotes that would be as literally almost just, and man, we were all like, whoa, what? Can't believe this. And I was like, is that quote even about what you're writing about anymore? Because it's very bland.
It's a shot at Ted Thompson for being old. And, you know, I remember
and there's more coming out now. There's some stories being reported that Ted Thompson is actually pretty sick and may not be able to get to his own Hall of Fame induction for the Packers Hall of Fame, that he actually has some ongoing health issues that the Packers were not going to report and did not make it part of his time. They were going to let him go and keep him in the family, but not just make anything his fault. And
right, you know, and John, and before you even get to the health thing about that, so they're trying to pin it on him like, well, Ted Thompson was too old and too senile to do this, because that's, if you read between the lines, that's what it is. John, 22-year-old linemen who are at the peak of their physical ability fall asleep during lineman meetings. Batman fell asleep during a meeting during that one movie. You probably, at some point, I don't know, stayed up late one night with one of your kids who was sick, and you had to give your wife a break, and you were up from 3 until 6 in the morning, got an hour nap, and then went to work, and then sat listening to somebody blabber on for an hour, and you might have nodded off for a second. Who knows? You can't do that. Ken Griffey Jr., the great Ken Griffey Jr., got in trouble. There was this story that came out that towards the end of his career, at the end of games, when he was like 42 years old, which is 3 years older than I am, he'd go up into the clubhouse after he'd get taken out of games and take a nap. Because why not?
Right.
And why not? You know, you can't do this, well, Ted Thompson was falling asleep because he was senile and old. And
doesn't back it up either. Just throws it in there as a conclusion without even walking up to how you should believe that or why it should be believed. Just throws it in there. And maybe it's true, but I thought it was terrible writing on my part.
Jordy Nelson probably fell asleep during wide receivers meetings at some point. You know, who cares?
And Mike McCarthy immediately said, I did not go sneak off to get massages and skip meetings to do it. And Tyler Dunn on Twitter saw this. He said, yeah, well, this part is, you know, like widely, it was widely reported. Like people there believed it. It was widely known that he did it. I don't even know why he would contest it. I was like, man, Tyler, go on Google anything. Everything that's not everything that's widely believed is true. That's a whole different thing. And he's just like, oh, it was widely known. I was like,
there's a whole bunch of people
that true.
Hey, Tyler, there's a whole bunch of people that don't believe the Holocaust happened.
Yeah. It's widely believed that the earth is flat.
Yeah. Kyrie Irving did change his opinion on that, by the way.
All right. All right, I've heard him defend himself several times on it, so it got ridiculous.
No, just very recently. He's like, yeah, the Earth's round now.
It's like, thank goodness for the Earth. I'm glad the Earth will be glad to know that.
Thank God.
The other two things that I do want to talk about quickly.
I can sleep better at night now. Thank you, Kyrie.
In the last call here is the AAF is dead, and it's ridiculous. Reading all the different stories, it's ridiculous to see that happened, how that happened, that essentially it was one person who said that they needed to get a deal with the NFL or he was out, and he just destroyed that league. Rather than play the long game, let them get a couple years. They didn't have a lot of money because they basically gave CBS the first year of television for free. Yep. They promised them something so they could build up goodwill, show them it was good football. And it was good football. It was not great football, but it was pretty good football. And the other thing is just...
It was C-plus football. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is, though, that the guy who stepped in, he's the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, which should be the Whalers, by the way, still. But yes. He turns out the AAF app had a very cool idea of tracking football players around the field so you could watch it without watching the video. You could still watch, you know, see where everybody is, where they're walking to, what the play is, where the ball is and stuff. It was a cool-looking app. They're taking basically that technology. He's going to use it and brought it to the NHL. They're going to try to use it for tracking players and pucks and make it better for television. Yeah, you stole that. Like, that was something they worked on, something they were going to make a big part of their branding, and this guy's just going to take it. And that's frustrating, too.
Well, at least he was an owner. I mean, it's what happened with the XFL, I mean... what were the couple of things that they stole from the XFL? They just got that for free by feigning interest in, like, maybe someday we'll back you and just, you know, and then the XFL came up. What were the two things that the XFL came up with that the NFL straight stole from it after it collapsed?
Well, not their kickoff idea.
No.
Their coin toss idea that they had.
Yeah, no, that was great, though. I did like that, even though that was like, hey, let's get two broken collarbones a game. But no,
and one concussion.
Oh, the suspended camera. That came from the XFL.
Okay.
And they straight, and the NFL straight sold that after the XFL left. And it's, I mean, that's what's going to happen with all these leagues. I mean, and the NFL, of course, it, the NFL, oh, the onside kick rule. Was that what got the AAF was trying out that one? And basically the NFL let them try it out for free and then didn't back them and then adopted it, right? Am I talking out my...
I guess I don't know that one. That is the other value of having a league like that. Like, the major leagues gets to test out things like pitch clock and all that because they have a minor league they can run it through with before they put it on the one that we all watch on TV.
Right. AAA is trying out the second base runner in extra innings this year.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a good idea. It can be your own laboratory, but they don't have that now. And the NFL won't do it because they, well, first off, all they told them was that you have to wait till our next collective bargaining, which is coming up fast. And this guy is just like, nope. No, I'm not doing it. It's got to happen now. And they're like, we can't do it now. We legally can't. There's a CBA, and we can't change it just yet. But we will soon. Let us talk about it.
Oh, my God. Well, the strong take is, and this is from no conspiracy theory site or anything like that. This just came from the head of Aaron Flodden, is that the NFL and NCAA are so deep in each other's pockets making money that everyone's like, what's the problem with the Spring League? You know, like, yeah, everyone wants to see spring football. Oh, there's a big problem with Spring League is the fact that the NFL owns the entire calendar. They went from owning 6 months to 11 months, and now they have all 12 months. And and the NCAA, who's making a ton of money off unpaid players, is not happy with that at all. So at least they still have the national championship and then for football, and then they have March Madness, which – if you've noticed, the NFL kind of dials it back during March. I mean, that's very obvious. The NFL kind of goes, and as soon as the game ends tonight, who's winning right now? Did Virginia win yet? Anyways, whoever wins tonight, after this, the NFL is going to be back on full bore because the NFL and NCAA are packing each other's pockets. And that's why no NFL sub-league or anything like that will happen. That's why there's no NCAA baseball, because there's minor leagues in baseball. So, well, NCAA can't make any money off baseball except for one weekend a year in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah.
You know, it's real simple. There's no money in having these minor league teams. That's the reason why NFL Europe's gone. That's the reason why NFL World is gone, or the World League is gone, because it didn't work. It didn't make them money. You know, even though it's an inferior product, there's the business model. They make billions of dollars. Obviously, they're doing something right that we don't see. As fans, we just want to see games. We just want to see people play. They're all about the money. So there you go. Sorry. Really tangent right there. I should be – it's that's the problem with us not being in the same studio. You can't throw things at me. So
that's all right. I'll just cut it out.
Edit.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's all we've got for this week. We could definitely go on for hours on this, but we're going to let you out of here, and we've definitely gone a little long today, but we'll do some selective editing here as well. But thank you for joining us again this week. Join us again next week. You follow me at jbarn54 on Twitter. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. You can also write us at podcast@ScottyJohnny.com and find all of our stuff either on Podbean, or you can find us, of course, on our website, ScottyJohnny.com, where we do post that as well as a couple little articles here or there about different things. Other than that, thank you. Please, if you do listen to us on Stitcher or iTunes or Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to us, please go give us a 5-star rating. Please do share our articles, our recent podcasts and everything as well. And whether you're on the town or on the go, remember that it is always on Wisconsin.
And remember, the unbelievably good-looking Andy Herman is with us next week.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.